Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Hazreti Nizamuddin Evliya Sahab Rahmetullahi Aleyh had passed on, and one of his main murids and Khalifa, Amir Khusru, he couldn't contain himself whilst supporting the janaza, the bier. He read these poetries. Ye tamasha ga ruhe alam tu, tu kujab tamasha mi ravi. He says, you are the spotlight for the entire world. The whole world focuses towards you. Where are you off to? Says, then he goes on to say that Hayf Bashad, this is zulm, that you're going and you're going without me. He's telling his sheikh, you're going and you're going without me. The people that report this, as he says these words, Hayf Bashad, you're going and you're leaving me and going away. The janaza, actually, the hands had come out of the janaza, and they had to pull away that Amir Khusru. You move away. You're causing a ripple. You're causing a problem here. There can be a fitna just now. So for these awliya-i kiram, then death really is not a thing to fear about. It is, for them, it's a wonderful experience. It's just a shift from one plane to another plane. A friend is meeting his friend. So they are anxious, they are looking forward to the trip, looking forward to the journey. Hafiz Shirazi, he also says some similar words. He says, if only I get that day, if only I experience that day, then I will go to meet Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, dancing and clapping away in excitement. I was longing for this for the entire life. Entire life was longing for this moment and for this day. When this day comes, really I'll be going in this state. Hazrat Muad Thami Sahib Rahmatullah, his father-in-law, when he had just initiated the path of righteousness and the path of wilayat, so he had gone so deep and he had progressed so tremendously that he had renounced the world entirely. Whereupon the mother-in-law went and complained to that buzurg, says, now what you have done to my son-in-law, he has to continue with his life. My daughter and their children and all that, they have to continue. And now he's renouncing everything, then how will he continue? So anyway, whatever dua the sheikh made, and his feelings were moderated. When the feelings are moderated, he realized it, because the sheikh did something that where there was that feeling, that bubbling feeling, and the yearning and all that, now it's moderated. So he got very, very upset. And he began to shout his sheikh, what have you done to me? Okay, that feelings that were in me all have become moderated now. It's not active like it used to be. The sheikh understood what he was doing. He just continued. Until around the time when he was about to die, the sheikh came back. And the same yearning and all that, he made dua that everything must be returned back to him, and that returned. Now when it returned, now he was pretty excited, all that. And he was dying, so they had the sheet over his face. So the woman, the household woman, when they saw this, they began to cry. Obviously, that's their father, someone's uncle, someone's grandfather. So they began to cry. So he removed the sheet off his face, and he shouted them, Are zalimo, kisi ko marne bhi nahi dete. You stupid people, you don't allow anybody to die also. Someone is dying peacefully, why don't you let him die at least? So when he shouted them, they all kept quiet. When they kept quiet, he put the sheet slowly over his head and he died. So for them, it's such an ease, such a comfortable experience. Allah Pak make it like this for us as well. Give us that realization that that is the real home. That is the real experience. Only once in a lifetime you get that experience, and that's the real experience. So it isn't a thing to be afraid about. like how people make it to be. See, it isn't a thing to be afraid about. Yes, we make the appropriate arrangements, we keep ourselves in the state of readiness, in the state of preparedness, and then when it comes, we take it. We take it in its stride. That Sahabi is in Uhud, and he says, I get the fragrance of Jannat. And he's going full swing, right? He's darting into the midst of the enemy. And he says, Wahan, I'm getting the fragrance of Jannat. And he throws himself into the midst of the enemy until he's killed. So they must have experienced something for them to say these type of words. It can't be that they didn't experience anything and they were just saying these type of words. No, they must have experienced something. So this experience, many people go through it. There's a cheer on the face, there's a smile on the face, there's a light that is beaming on many, many mayyats' faces. So this is a reality, and this is not something that we must feel so afraid about, that we get into a cocoon, into a shell. Okay, what's going to happen then? Okay? People, what happens to people is that they think about the outer formation of the grave, that we'll be dumped into that hole and there'll be mounds of sand dumped onto us. So what's going to be of us? So that's just the outer shell. The real thing is something else, totally different. That's just the outer shell. Your body has just been placed here. So this is the earthly sojourn, the earthly journey that has ended, and this is how you end that earthly journey. Really, your real abode is somewhere else. This is not your real abode. You are in Alam al-Barzakh. And Alam al-Barzakh, compared to this world, is purely Jannat. Compared to this world, it's pure Jannat. When it's pure Jannat, then you are allowed to move around freely as you want. Wherever you want, you are allowed to move. Today you want to go and sit in the company of the Anbiya alayhim salam. That way you're sitting in the company of the Anbiya alayhim salam. Then you want to sit in the company of your father. Then you sat down. And then, you know, sometimes I say to the friends, please, your extra stories, leave it. When we'll be in Jannat, inshallah, Allah will grant us this place. We'll talk all the granny stories there. Yeah, just leave it now. Just postpone it for some time. Then inshallah, we'll sit for hours and sit granny stories, what the grandfather said and what he said and who's ever said. We'll listen to your stories nicely, properly. Yeah, just shorten the story there. So, someone wants to see, for example, his great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather. So, he just presses a button and he's there already. It's so easy. You just press a button, you dial in the number and you're already there. Yeah, you still have to go to the airport, park off your car, jump onto the plane. And, you know, today there was a question, one person is asking a question. Can you make such a joke? He's asking the question, can you make such a joke? The pilot is radioing the tower that I'm 300 miles away from the land. No, I'm 300 miles away from the land, I'm in sea, and 6,000 feet above sea level. And I'm totally, the fuel is completely finished, there's no fuel left at all. So he's radioing the tower for some guidance, what should he be doing? So the radio is answering him, just say, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. So this was a question that came to me, can you make such a joke? Anyway, people got nothing to do in Ramadan, so they make this type of jokes. So, what I'm getting at is, this is a wonderful experience, really, really, brothers. It's just that we need to build a little bit of feeling for that. Build a little bit of feeling of the akhirat, ponder about that, work in that direction. And then when you get that taste, there was one brother that passed away, you know. Simple person, couldn't read the Quran Sharif well. Very, very simple person, very, very simple. Wealthy person, but very simple. Come here, joke, mix around with all the people. But he should tell me his his spiritual condition, he should tell me himself personally. He says, Mawla, when I sit for zikr, why I get some experience? I ask him, what experience you get? Because he was an illiterate person, can't read and write very well. So he says, when I sit down and make zikr, then I feel actually that someone has placed a toffee into my mouth. I can get the sweetness, physical sweetness. Ordinary person. But these people get it when their hearts are very clean. They don't have any malice, any dirt, any filth in the hearts. And he doesn't know about the hadith, but he's experienced it. How he experiences is the cleanliness of the heart. Mind and the heart is in that direction. Allah Ta'ala gives them a taste of these things. So these are genuine things, these are facts, this is the truth. Okay? Just that we need to acquire a taste for it. You know, like an Indian is born, right? After 3-4 years, then the mother makes him acquire a taste for chilies, right? And then the taste is so deep in him that till the day he dies, he must have the chilies. Otherwise, the food can't digest. So similarly, you have to acquire a taste for these things. Once you acquire a taste for it, then you don't want to give it up. This love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and this true muhabbat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And how do you acquire it? How do you experience it? Our problem is generally that we want to get something and to get it overnight. Whereas we don't realize that this is not a small journey. The journey of this world is so short the journey, right? 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, 90 years max, right? You don't hardly hear of anybody going over 90. Right? On the road, you can still drive over 120. But here, max you go 90, 95. Hey, 95 is still around, he's still moving. Like it's news, you know, 95. People ask, is he still moving? So that's max. Generally, you don't go beyond that. So it's such a short journey. But look at the preparation that we make for this short little journey. The child is going to school, kindergarten, then he's going to a creche, then he's going to office class, then he's going to primary school, then high school, then college, then university, then taking up a career, opening up a business, one is not working out, going somewhere else, then doing some type of investments, and then one investment locally, one abroad, and then if that existing fails, then you need to have an insurance cover. What magajmari, what pains we go through just for the short journey of 90 years that we need to have something secure, something happens at once, for the rainy day, what have you got? Okay? But for that journey, which is thousands and thousands and thousands of years, millions of years, then what investments have you made? What security have you got for that? What preparations have you made? Are we fair in that proportion? You're living 90 years here, you made that type of effort. You're living perpetually there, what type of effort have we done accordingly? What have we done? Are we fair to ourselves? So if our minds are correctly thinking, then we'll make that type of arrangements. And when we do make that type of arrangements, we'll begin to experience that type of sweetness, that enjoyment, that experience, that sweetness. We actually begin to feel it whilst we are in this life. In this world, we begin to experience that. One person was about 25 years ago, when that first jihad took place in Afghanistan between the Russians and the Afghanis. He says, I used to go myself on a Friday. Generally, the Friday we are off. So I used to go and I used to thrust my hand into the sand. And without any exaggeration, I pull out my hand and it should be pure musk. Pure musk. You just thrust your hand inside the grave and take it out from the graves of the shaheed, and there you're getting a pure musk fragrance coming out of it. So these people must have experienced something. For them to give their lives and all that, I'm sure they went mad, right? They went 2 cents or 3 cents short. They were full, they were right, they were understanding. And then they gave their lives. They must have seen something. Allah must have given them a glimpse for them to do all these things here. So a little turn, a little tilt in our lives. If we're going in one direction, a little diversion from that cause, onto the right course. And then you see the type of enjoyment Allah Ta'ala has got in store for you. Okay? The type of enjoyment, the type of excitement Allah Ta'ala has got in store for you, unimaginable. You can't even imagine what He's got for you. One student was studying in Thana Bhuvan, and he was involved in an epidemic. He became very critical, and some of his friends and some ulama, like it is the Masnoon method, when you go and visit the sick person, then you give him some hope. There is a way to go and visit the sick person. That's why our ulama say that everybody shouldn't go. And if you have to go, you want to go, then go with some elders, some experienced people. So they will teach you how to visit, what to say, what not to say. And if you just came across one situation and then you want to go and visit a sick and you say, no, I know how to do it, then you'll cause a problem for the sick person and for yourself. One person, he went to pay his respect to a sick person and he heard that man lost his son. Someone died, so he went to pay his respect to the deceased family. So he heard someone saying that, oh, you lost your son 3 years of age. May Allah Ta'ala grant you a better replacement. So he said, no, I learned it now. When you go and visit someone who lost the near and dear one, then this is the word to be said. Then may Allah Ta'ala grant you a better replacement. So anyway, not many months after that, someone lost their father. Father was about 90 years of age. So lost the father. So now I learned it very well now. So everybody is going to offer the condolence. So he also joined them. They now all that man's children are already 60, 70 years of age. So he's going to offer the condolence to them. And he's telling that old lady and the children, everybody, may Allah Ta'ala grant you all a better replacement. They gave him two kicks and chased him away. But what are you saying? You're saying my mother is already 85. Now, what are you saying, better replacement? So you need to have some akal, at least some akal, where to place yourself, how to place yourself. And if you don't have that akal, at least go with some people with akal. If someone got brains, go with them. Don't go yourself. You learn the thing. Now you just want to go and experiment yourself, cause problems for yourself, cause problems for everybody else. So this is a problem we have in this day and time, that we don't have it and we don't want to learn it. And there is a way to learn it. If you have it, then you have it, you know it, you know what to do. And you don't have it, you don't have it. Then you need to take the company of those people who have it. For some time, after some days, some experience, then you get an understanding of it, get a hold of it. You know, do it independently. This is a problem. It's a very great problem. Our Buzurgana Deen say, "Man la sheikha lahu fa sheikhu wa shaitan." You don't have a spiritual guide, then your guide is shaitan. Allama Ibn Jawzi rahmatullahi is a great, great authority in hadith. Very great authority in hadith. He's got one kitab, Talbisa Iblis. So he's written an incident there. One man is off for Hajj, you see. In old days, now you're talking of 700-800 years ago, he's going for Hajj. He's got a young daughter, 15-16 years of age, and obviously it is going to be cumbersome, difficult for him to ask his daughter to accompany him on this journey, hard journey, 1,000 kilometers, he has to go by horse, whatever else. To take a young girl like that, it's not a simple thing. So he thought of a plan, all right. I see one person is a regular musalli. Let me go and talk to him. Perhaps he can take care of my daughter in my absence. Because now the old days, 1,000 kilometers to go and come back and then Hajj and Medina Munawara, it is at least about an 8-9 month job. You're not going to do it so easily. So that musalli say, hey, you can't do that. That's fitna, that. Young. So he knew that that's haram. I mean, he's objecting and he says, you can't do this type of a thing. You can't keep your daughter by me because shaitan will come in between. man persisted. I got no other option, no other alternative. Please do help me out. I said, all right. So he prepared a room that this girl must be there all alone while she's in the main part of the house. And then he would make sure that two times in the day, food, whatever the requirements, are sent off to the girl. Now, it's an 8-9 month duration. After the first month or so, Shaitan comes to the man, tells him, but you know, she's all alone, she may suffer depression, bouts of depression, etc. At least go and make her salam or something, you know. So he went and made her salam. And then after the second month, all right, you know, you made salam also, but imagine if you were just all alone in the house, nobody there to talk to you, how would you have felt? So at least go and talk to her, at least cheer up, bring her spirits up, bring her, make her feel nice. So by the second month, he went and spoke to her. By the third month, they became informal, casual with each other. And by the fourth month, he did what he was not supposed to be doing. Then he realized that this girl has become pregnant. This girl has become pregnant. Anyway, what he did was, when he realized that now he's going to be caught out for what he's done, he went and murdered the girl. Killed the girl. Says dead people carry no tails. So he went and killed the girl. But all this waste is stemming from, it's stemming from this point. Man la shaykha lahu fa shaykhu wa shaytan. You don't have a spiritual guide. Then who is your guide? Your guide is shaytan. Because you're taking the cue, you're taking the lead from him. He says, you know, do this, do this, do this. مَثَلُهُ فَمَثَلُهُ كَمَثَلِ الشَّيْطَانِ إِذْ قَالَ لِلْإِنسَانِ اكْفُرْ فَلَمَّا كَفَرَ قَالَ إِنِّي بَرِيءٌ مِّنْكَ إِنِّي أَخَافُ اللَّهَ رَبَّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Shaitan brings you right to the border of destruction. And when you just about to fall in the pit of destruction, then he says, إِنِّي بَرِيءٌ مِّنْكَ. I got nothing to do with you. Because he got you where he wants to get you. You're down in the pit, then he's gone. That's the idea of Shaitan, to ensure that you're in the pit. When you're in the pit, then he's gone, he's moved away. So, therefore, our mashayikh and our ulama kiram insist that, especially in this age and time, you need someone as a guide. In the past also, you required a guide. You required someone to take you on, to lead you, to hold your hand and see you through. And nowadays, it's become even more important. Because at every turn, there is some challenge, there is some problem, something that is confronting you. You don't know where to turn sometimes, to the right, to the left, whether this is guidance, whether it's misguidance, you can't see it yourself. And if you're going to experiment with it, then obviously you're going to fall into problems. So you can't experiment. Though, like this case here, man knew that this was wrong. He knew it was fitna. Didn't he have the knowledge? He knew that, because he objected at the beginning. But when the man insisted and continued, then he gave in, he relented. And eventually, he's come to the point where he's committed zina and murder. Not just zina, but zina and murder. See? To just save himself, he did whatever he did, what he was not supposed to do, he did. See? So, this guidance that we need, it's a system of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah Pak wants that we come to him, but we come to him with a procedure, right? In every namaz, in every rakat, we repeat this word, Sirat al-Ladina an'amta alayhim, the path of the favored. The Quran didn't say the path of the Quran or the path of the Sunnah. What did Allah say? Sirat al-Ladina an'amta alayhim, the path of the favored. So what is Allah Ta'ala alluding towards? He's alluding towards the fact that there's going to be a favored class all the time. All the time in this world, there's going to be a favored class. So if you want to be favored, then you join the favored class. That's what he's saying you. Otherwise, Allah would have said, the path of the Sunnah, the path of the Quran, the path of the Hadith, he used the word Sirat al-Ladina an'amta alayhim. The path of the favored. What do you get when you join the path of the favored? Hazrat Mullah Ismail Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, I explained earlier on that, like in this age, we have the likes of Mullah Muhammad Ilyas Sahib Rahmatullahi, who is a revivalist for the 15th or the 14th century. Then the 13th century revivalist was Mawlana Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, Mawlana Ismail Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi. They were the revivalists of that age, of that era. So, someone had asked him, but what inspired you to link up with Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullahi? He says, you see, let me tell you just one incident. One incident I'll tell you, and you will get to understand what inspired me to join up with Sayyid Sahib Rahmatullahi. He says, I was teaching my sister Mishkat Sharif. Now, in the old days, this was the trend, that the brother will venture out and he will learn the kitabs. And when he'll learn it, he'll master it, and he'll come into the home and he will teach the woman folk. So the woman folk are educated by the elder brother. Brother is going out, he learned it properly and he taught. So in this way, the fitna is minimized. But if you have a situation where girls are running to girls' madrasas and all that, whatever, alright, it's an interim solution. It's a solution because we don't have any other structure for that girl to be educated, right? If she's going to be living at home and there's no education facilities, then the mother is going to be stressing all the time. This girl here now, her time is getting wasted. She's not educating. And there's nobody to offer the education. So then, for some reason or the other, the mother will push her to a college, to a university or high school. From the fire to the, from the fry pan into the fire. It's worse, right? So it's alright, the interim, going to a girl's madrasa. But that girl's madrasa also is not the right thing, not the best thing. It's a short-term solution. If you keep it as a short-term solution, it's alright. But if you keep it as a permanent solution, obviously you have shifted the goalpost. The post for the girl was the home. Qarna fi buyutikun. That was the place. That was the original style. Like if you go and see maybe your granny or great granny, then the original style was they stayed at home. They remained at home. And whatever talim was supposed to be administered was administered at home. And perhaps, maybe if they had to, just for 3-4 years in the infancy, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and then that education was imparted to them. But after the 9 and 10, then you go back to the home. Now, the one problem is they don't have any structure in the house. The second, the mother feels burdened. Now, what do I do for this girl here? Because there's still 8, 9 years before she gets married. So what do I do? Her time is getting wasted. Right? And she doesn't want to take the additional responsibility of educating her own daughter. So they found this solution as an interim solution. But as I say, if it's a short-term solution, then treat it as a short-term solution. Don't consider it as a permanent solution. If you know, treat it as a permanent solution, then you shifted the girl out of her place. When you shifted the person from out of the place, obviously you are asking for problems. Then you have the problem like you hear all the time. Girls are going out to madrasas, whatever else, and the problems that come thereafter, you see. So, where the Quran Sharif says, the Hadith says that this is your place, then in that place will be her sanctuary, that place will be her safety, that place will be her security. But if you shift her from her place, then you're going to cause problems. Definitely going to cause problems. Therefore, they say it very simply, that in this age, the major problem, you know, is the pill and the television. Now, television, all of us know that it was a problem, right? And the pill, why it's a problem for the day? So it's a problem for this age. Because that woman, after 2-3 children, she's on the pill, right? Contraceptive. She's taking the pill. When she's on that pill, so there's no more children coming up now. So she's got the freedom to move around wherever she wants. Drive, move, haul, ball, doll, draw, anything, everywhere she can go. Right? She can move, she's got freedom. Anywhere she can go. So she's not tied up to her children. She's not tied up to her children, she's free. Right? When she's free, then the children are free. And all growing up in a free environment. Wherever she wants to go, she can go. Wherever the children want to go, they can go. So they got freedom. The mother got freedom. Everybody's got freedom. In the old day, what used to happen, she's got a litter of 6, 7, she's got, right? So the whole day she got figure to make about the children. This one is not right, and to get that one right, I need to get this one right. And by the time she's getting everybody right, the whole day has ended just in looking after her children. Her day has ended, her life has ended in looking after her children. But now when she is restricted herself to 2-3, then outwardly it seems very nice. Oh, she's free to do whatever she wants. She's fit as a fiddle, whatever else. But then she's got the freedom. And that freedom needs some occupation, right? Then she'll have to go to a gym for her fitness. From the gym to the coffee shop, and from the coffee shop to some friend. And then from some friend, then she wants some entertainment as well. She also wants some entertainment. You also got feelings, she also got entertainment. She's a husband, you want old, I want some entertainment. So it's a whole chakkar, this thing here. So you see this pull, the problem is it has created, the complications that it has created. We don't, when we look at a problem, we don't look at one isolated problem, we look at it across the board. You know, a simple example to illustrate this is a cigarette. You know, in every cigarette advertisement you find, it's injurious to health, it's cancerous, etc., right? But someone can turn around and tell you, but my grandfather, he smoked all his life, right? 70 years, he was 8 years of age, he still pulled. Nothing happened to him, right? So you won't take one isolated case and say, no, that it is not injurious to health. Overall, it is injurious. One, two people got saved, so you don't make that a rule. You'll see the majority. Majority, do they suffer, do they have some health problems, etc., then you say it's not right. So what we are getting at is that in the old days, this was the status quo. Status quo is women, they had their place in their home. Men had their place, women had their place. So there was a balance in the community. But now, if the men and the women both are at the workplace, obviously it's going to be a problem. See? Tell me which workplace, I tell you, like, I can challenge this, because I'm listening to this problem all the time. I ask you, which workplace is such where there isn't a complaint from the woman? Nearly every workplace, women are complaining. You know, there's someone flirting, someone, she's in the work and someone is touching her backside, someone is doing something, someone is doing something. In every workplace, there is. Every workplace. Initially, that was the case, and now it's turned around. Now the woman is becoming forward. Before, it was just the man that was starting off and initiating this relationship, and now the women are doing this type of thing. I had explained some days ago that one person came and told me, Mona, I want to take the second wife. In the meanwhile, his wife phoned me, said, Mona, please, please stop him, stop him. Every woman gets afraid, you know, that's taking the second wife. The woman, although it's permissible, we don't say it's haram, but the wife is phoning me, please tell him not to take a second wife. So anyway, he came to me, he wanted to speak in confidence. So I asked him, what's your problem? He said, Mona, I must take a second wife. What's the pressing need? So he says, see, I am in the buying division of the company, big chain store, and I am the buying division. I'm main person, I'm doing all the buying. So I asked him, then your second marriage, how will it solve the problem? He says, no, what I'm going to do, see, that second wife, I spoke to the company already about this girl. So the company is prepared to put her in my position. I'll take another position. But I said, what is this position? Why is this position a problem? So he says, I'm doing the buying here. In 95% of the cases on the other end, all women. See, the companies that you are dealing with, 95% of their buyers and sellers, they are all women. And when I start off a conversation, I want to buy this product, for example, we're negotiating. So he says, Mona, without any exaggeration, in just 2 minutes, that girl is talking bedroom stories. Now, I am 27, 28 years of age. I'm a young man. My blood is still hot. Mona, I'm going to restrain. To what point am I going to restrain? I'm going to resist. How much must I resist? Right, someone is old now, 55, 60, 70. They say, that days are finished now. Right? He doesn't have those feelings. But now, 27, 28 years of age, and I have to do this job here. When I have to do this job here, and I'm just starting off a conversation, and they are talking of bedroom stories, even 3 minutes, 2 minutes. How must I resist? And how long can I resist? So I already spoke to the company, they'll give me another position, and they'll put my wife in that. I'll help her, I'll show her the whole how it works. So we are talking of Maulana Ismail Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, and the old style was that the woman knew their place. The place was their home, so they remained there. So he says that I was teaching my sister Mishkat Sharif Hadith Kitab, when the start of Hadith Kitabs, then they start off with Mishkat, then they go to Bukhari, Muslim, Tirmizi, Abu Dawud, etc. But they start off with Mishkat Sharif. So conveniently I had left out the section on Nikah, because my sister was widowed, see. So I conveniently left the whole section on Nikah, the fazilat, the virtues of Nikah, etc. I left it out. Because I was afraid, if I'm going to teach her that section on Nikah, then she may just say that I want to get married because of practicing the Sunnah, getting the Sawab and all that. She's very staunch on the Hadith, very strict. And she will just say, I want to get married. And, you know, in India around that time, it was a thing of great embarrassment that a widow got remarried. So when a woman is widowed, then for her to get married again was a very, very big disgrace at that time. Like in this day and age, in many Hindus, if a woman has lost a husband, then, she can't remarry. She can't. She must just remain like that. Even though she lost the husband when she was young, 20 years, 22 years of age, husband died, you can't remarry. You have to just live like that. Either you go and do that sati. Sati means that you go and offer yourself to the fire, like how the husband is going to be burnt in the crematorium, you must offer yourself. And where this practice is not in vogue, then you must just remain like that. So this was like a practice that was inherited from the Hindus. Muslims had taken it, and it was a thing of great disgrace, embarrassment that a woman gets married. So conveniently, just to save myself from that disgrace and embarrassment, I left teaching her the section on Nikah. But look at the change that took place in my life. The moment I associated with Hazrat Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, then I was the person, I took the initiative to get her married. I insisted on her that she must get married, just to practice the Sunnah. I broke that whole custom, I broke it out, and we made sure that as far as I could influence people, I broke that custom out. So where we were, and just after associating myself with the Ahlullah, with the godly people, and then see what the change came into my life, into our lives. So what we're getting at is this need, the need to associate with someone. So I don't say we have to stay for long durations of period like they used to stay in the old days, but at least to consult with them, dini issues, things that relate to our religion, things that relate to our own personal selves, what do we do? I asked Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, that should we consult our religious elders, our mashayikh, etc., on our personal domestic issues as well? So he related an incident to me. He says, Maulana Thanvi Rahmatullah had to deliver a talk in a certain town. So after the talk was over, the host, he asked me to speak to his son. Son was about 15, 16 years of age. That son of his is not punctual on namaz. So the host asked me to speak to his son. So I went to speak to the son. But you must read your namaz, you know. A lot of barakat and a lot of understanding you'll get. So the son says, you're asking me to perform namaz, whereas I don't believe in Islam. Na'uzubillah. I don't believe in Islam. Now this type of story I can believe, because I receive this type of complaints from women and from men. They tell you that we don't believe. Well, we don't believe in anything, Islam, and we don't believe. But we just conform with the family practices. You know, they go to masjid and all that, we just conform. Because if we don't conform, we'll be ostracized. They say, you're an atheist, they'll throw us out of the homes. So just to not be ostracized and live with that respect, therefore we just conform and agree with the religious functions, whatever else. So I can I can understand it because I went through it. People came and told me, they confided themselves. Anyway, so this person told more times, you're asking me to perform namaz. I don't believe in namaz. I don't believe in Islam. So anyway, at more times, Rahmatullah, when he spoke to the father, the host, says, hey, this thing is serious now. I'll give you a suggestion. I'll make a suggestion to you. But you don't ask me the proof. Don't ask me the reasoning and why and the proof. And don't ask me to explain it. Just do as I say. Inshallah, Allah Pak willing, things will work out for you. The child had been going, attending a Hindu school, Hindi school, like how you have an English school. Hindi is a language, is not a religion. Hinduism is a religion, but Hindi is a language. Like how you have an English school, so you have a Hindi school. So the child had been attending an Islamic school. An Islamic school the child was attending. Mulana suggested to the old man that you pull out your child from the Islamic school and put him into the Hindi school. So while the man was desperate, the host was desperate when he heard that the child is too into atheism. So he was desperate. Now, apne izzat ka sawal hai, akhirat ka sawal hai. What do I do? So he pulled him out from the Islamic school, like how we have Islamic school. He pulled him out from the Islamic school and he pushed him into the Hindi school. In just 6 months, he became a proper Muslim. So they asked Mulana, what was the mystery? What was the mystery? How did this thing happen? So he said, no, call a boy. So what happened? So he says, I was in an Islamic school, so I became immune to Islam. Like how you have Arabs living in an Arab country, they're immune. We are an Islamic country now, so we can do everything. We can drink, we can womanize, we can do everything. Why we became immune to the practices. Right? So he was shifted from the Islamic school into a Hindi school. Now when he was shifted to the Hindi school, most of the students there were Hindu. Most of the students were Hindu. So they will run him down for his Islam. Yeah, you'll do Bakrid, you know. Slumos, you're doing this. Right? So he says, now, whatever it was, but it was my family reputation, respect, right? Integrity. They were picking out my family reputation because these are the practices of my family. So I had to guard my family in integrity and respect. So when they picked out on anything, for example, they picked out on Qurbani, right? Then I would go to the local imam, to the local alim, and ask him, all right, this is the questions that they have, the objections they have raised up against Islam, what is the answer? And he should give me so beautiful answers, I would floor them down, smash them down, completely, I would smash them down. Then they talk about namaz, or they talk about khatna, Muslims do this, whatever else. So, Mullah gave me such beautiful answers, I silenced them one shot. Everything, I just silenced them. And before I knew it, and the reality of Islam and the philosophy, the wisdom, all that began to become manifest and clear to me. So now, from that atheism, I came a proper Muslim. But this is how I came a proper Muslim. So you see this consulting, asking, finding out. Allah Pak has placed a system that you aren't self-sufficient. خَلَقَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ شَيْئًا. When Allah Pak had created you from the wombs of your mothers, you didn't know anything. Then gradually you educated, went for some education, discipline, correction, guidance. Eventually with time, you came up. You got that level of maturity, understanding. All that came, in time it came. It didn't come directly from the mother's womb. It came with time. So, same with Islam and Deen. You need someone to guide you all the time. All the time you need someone to guide you, someone to teach you, someone to correct you. And you can't do this of your own. You know, one Tabligh Jamaat had returned sometimes ago, 3-4 years ago, they returned. So everybody is anxious to listen to Kalguzari. So I asked, what was the Kalguzari? So he says that we were boarded the plane, and next to me was a pure Arab professor, and He was a descendant of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu, pure Arabic professor. So meat was being served on the plane, and I see that Arab professor, he was eating it, whereas it was a British Airways flight or so, and he was eating it. No halal, nothing, and he was eating it. So now the Tabligh Jamaat people are taught that, you know, you don't go straight, don't attack the person straight, you go with wisdom, hikmat, and all, a little bit of diplomacy, and you try and correct the person so that you don't hurt the person. They are trained to speak like that. Alhamdulillah, they do a good job, generally they do a good job. One Jamaat had gone to Algeria, came across an old man, 75, 80 years of age, and he used to be in and out of the bar, always drunk and really drunk. So they went for guest to his place. So this old man is saying, hey, by my whole life I lived in sin, and you're asking me to come for namaz, how can everything come right for me? Well, the Tabligh Jamaat got a style. They said, no, anta abuna, anta sheikhuna. They had to throw him up. You are a father, you are a master. So they brought him, they picked him up. Eventually they got him out of whatever he was doing. He made tawbah, he had a ghusl and all that. And for the whole night he cried. In the morning he died. How beautiful. So it's a little bit of style. Jamaat uses a little bit of wisdom, hikmat, etc. and get the person right. How to draw the person. You don't make a person despondent. Don't make him feel that there is no hope left. Whatever he is, your job is not to make the person despondent. Your job is to just bring the person. So, the same now, this Tabligh Jamaat is there, and this man is there, Arab professor now. Who are you going to explain to him? So anyway, somehow the Jamaat person tried to create a conversation. Start off, initiated a conversation. And he says, but this is meat. Isn't it meat? See, yeah, but the Quran Sharif says, Kulu mimma dhukira smullahi alayhi. Eat the food on which Allah Pak name has been taken. Eat the food on which the name of Allah Ta'ala has been taken. So I took the name of Allah Ta'ala and I'm eating. What's wrong? I have taken the name of Allah Ta'ala and I'm eating. So what's wrong? See, so his problem is, he quoted the verse out of context. If you look at that entire chapter of the Quran Sharif, what it's talking about is the idolatry practices. These people, when they used to slaughter animals, they would invoke the names of their idols and then slaughter. So Allah said, لَا تَأْكُلُوا مِمَّا لَمْ يَذْكُرِ اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Don't eat that. But كُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. At the time of slaughter, then animal on which the name of Allah Ta'ala had been taken, eat that. He took a straightforward translation, كُلُوا مِمَّا ذُكِرَ اسْمَ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. Eat the meat on which the name of Allah Ta'ala has been invoked. So I said, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and I have eaten. What's wrong? So you see the need of a guide, someone to instruct, someone to learn from, someone to guide you, someone to take you along. It's such an important thing. Unfortunately, we don't attach that type of importance. And you know, it's a very simple, easy way. Very simple and a very easy way. You know, someone doesn't have deen. If he came out in Jamaat, for example, 30 days, 20 days, he came out in Jamaat. How many things he will get right? Or he'll learn about his beard, he'll learn about his clothing, he'll learn about istinja, he'll learn about namaz, he'll learn a little bit of paki, napaki, he'll learn a little bit of haram, halal. At least the major structures, he will get that within 20 days, because there's interaction, there's movement, there's action carrying on everywhere, so he'll pick it up. So this is because of the force of the environment. That there are people that are much more guided, much more learned, much more educated, much more experienced. So in that few days, you'll learn so much. So therefore, you need the guidance of someone, you know, as you move in life, as you're progressing in life, then you're going to come across all types of hurdles, all type of challenges, and you can't take them on yourself. You know, all type of hurdles, all type of challenges, you can't take it on yourself. You need someone to guide you. In every field, for that matter, Allah has placed it such you have a cardiac problem, you can't treat yourself. You need to go to someone. You've got a problem with your eyes, you need someone. Allah has created some specialist. Problem with your teeth, Allah has created a specialist for that as well. So similar in your deen, like in other fields, Allah has created specialists that you go to them, take the advice and move on. Similar is deen as well. When you got a hurdle, you come across a problem, then you go to someone experienced, righteous experience. You go to him, he will show you a way out, he'll show you an exit. He will make you feel not despondent. A person who's got experience, obviously now, you can't just go to, like you got a complicated case, right? Then you can't go to an attorney that just came out of the box now. He just came out of the box from the college or university. You won't go to him. You look for some experienced person. How many cases he's handled, and he's been through the mill or not, what people have to say about him, then you would go to him. So same with an alim. One has just come out of the box now. You can't just go to him for advice and counsel. He's just come out fresh now. He needs to build up experience. After a period of time he built up experience, you go to him. Alhamdulillah, he will lead you across. Where you were in a state of despondency, he shows you this only hope here. Where you thought there was only fear, there's a lot of things to look for. So this is when we follow right procedures. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq. And these are one of the odd nights, 25th night. Let's try and take the maximum benefit of the night. Don't see that our time is not wasted in futile talks or wasting the time in any other thing. Some Quran Sharif recitation, some zikr, tilawat, or whatever, and however we can occupy ourselves, don't waste the time. Appreciate these few moments. We don't know that which moment is that moment of acceptance. Maybe in that moment that we're making zikr or Quran Sharif or tilawat, whatever, one moment may be the moment of acceptance. It may just coincide, and everything just worked out for us. So these are this precious, beautiful moments that we are going through. Allah Ta'ala accept all of us.